It is about a journey of a human being in the world of technology and robots, and maybe less so literal robots, but more so people who are acting like robots or who think of themselves as hosts of data or different attributes. And it's about confusion and feeling humiliated and feeling dehumanized and trying to find a way, trying to find love and human relationships.
Day Podcast Radio Show with Bruce Hilliard. Today and every day, reaching out for innovative ideas in every way. Today's show is brought to you by Your Future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
I want to know you as a computer. Forget the biblical sense. I want my perfect device to read your heart rate. I want my perfect device to know your brain waves. New intimacy on display. New connections, all digitized. New sky in perfect 3D. And yes, for $3.99, you can edit the color. And for additional 10, you can move the ad to the right. Do you like it? New intimacy for the people. Your mama's fears were silly. It all worked out.
Our guest, Tessa Lena, has a bio that reads like a movie script. She was born and raised in Moscow and attended the prestigious Moscow Conservatory. She is a classically trained singer and pianist that wanted to be a geneticist. Her interest expanded to Tibetan music and language, which led her to Tibet with her backpack to do a field study in linguistics and ethnomusicology. After fighting off a sex trafficker in southern China, she settled in Chicago. In Chicago, she started a band working with her hero Ian McDonald of King Crimson and Foreigner, and drummer Alan Lake, who has played and recorded with Madonna, Brian Ferry, Julian Lennon, Ministry, Brian Wilson, and Sam Moore from Sam and Dave. After a few years in Chicago, Tessa moved to New York and started a new band, Tessa Makes Love, along with occasional collaborations by Ian McDonald. In 2016, Tessa started Coalition for Artistic Dignity and organized a conference in Brooklyn dedicated to artistic dignity, social power, and corporate responsibility. Here is Tessa to tell more of the story, and here is her music. Awfully pleased to have you, and I have to say that your bio reads as unique and unusual as anybody that I've spoken with, so you hold that title.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your show. And my bio, well, I didn't expect my bio to be like that when I was a kid. It kind of turned out this way.
I don't know. I don't even want to start out with music. It sounds like you've done everything from linguistics to ethnomusicology to, wow, on and on and on.
Well, I mean, music started the earliest. I actually started doing music when I was 5. And my parents didn't ask me. They just took me to a school because, you know, that's what Russian parents do. And of course, when I was just waiting to talk to somebody, to a teacher, one of the teachers came up to me and he said, "Oh, little girl, what music instrument do you want to play?" And I said, "Violin." And they put me straight into the piano class because it was more prestigious. So I never got what I wanted.
Off to a good start. You're going to play what we want you to play and like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I grew to like playing the piano and thinking like a pianist in terms of harmony.
Yeah, it's a good basic instrument, I think, to learn. If you got to learn one instrument, that would be a good one.
Definitely. But you know what I found out about pianos? like all my life, and I was doing classical piano since I was a kid, there was something missing. I felt like, you know, I like Bach, for example, it's really great and I really love it, but there's something that is just a tad fakish. And I didn't know what it was until I heard Bach in his original tuning, how he wrote it. And finally it came alive. So what they did with Equal Temperament, the modern kind, I'm not a huge fan of.
Oh.
They kind of murdered the soul of it a little bit. No, I mean, I almost cried because after so many years, I finally heard the music that I kind of loved, but with a tiny disclaimer, all of a sudden sounding just like it was meant to sound, like fully alive and present. So they stole something out of it when they made it technologically and conveniently equally tempered, equally, you know what it is.
I'm gonna edit the part out where we couldn't get our Skype to work, but this wonderful world of technology has somehow stomped on things, important things, I think.
Well, it's probably always a trade-off between convenience and the complete aliveness, because technology in itself is a wonderful thing. It makes things easy and better, and it allows us to do many things. But I think every time we make things a bit more convenient, we also lose something. Like, for example, when people invented written language, we obtained the ability to write something down for people 10 generations after, for example. But then the memory went. People used to remember everything because they didn't have a choice. And as soon as we decided we could write things down, then people could no longer remember what they wanted to. So it's always a trade-off.
Yeah, it seems music is a good language for of retaining the thought.
No, music is universal, and music moves things in ways we don't even know. And it is my favorite medium anyway. I'm sure there are many favorite mediums for different people, but I think it's pure and it can be used for good or for bad, just like anything else. It can be used to heal and it can be used to distract. And having grown up in a different culture, I see the contrast very sharply, because in the American culture, music is often used to just distract and to keep people's minds on something else. And entertainment is wonderful, and you know, you soothe the soul, and it's great. But when it's just pure distraction, it's its own beast. Music has tons of power.
Maybe that is the downside of technology, is it's full of distractions. The American government operates on distraction. Nobody knows what in the hell is going on most of the time.
I think that you're very correct. Most of the time, or all of the time, most people, or even nobody knows anything, because it's a very interesting world.
It's confusing by design.
Probably. I think that we all have pockets where we can do what we love to do, but if we want to get at the big picture, it's dark and confusing indeed.
So you've been all over the world, it looks like.
I've traveled a bit. Yep, I've traveled in Europe and in Asia, and I did some research in Tibet. I researched music and linguistics. So I did one of those stupid things, chasing unsuspecting nomadic Tibetans with silly questionnaires about words. They probably thought I wasn't very intelligent, and they probably had a point, because they, you know, they're going about their lives, they're doing what's important, and here I am. Like, what word do you think of when you see this word? They're like, what is she talking about? Well, yep, I did that.
What brought you to America? And don't say
curiosity.
An airplane.
Oh,
okay.
Mostly curiosity, because I wanted to continue on with my Tibetan studies. And then I got here and I fell for the trap. I decided it would be fun to be just like everybody else. Because most of my life, I was the artistic kid, and it's great, and my friends were artistic, but on the back of my mind, there's always this thing, like, I'm not quite normal, I'm not quite like everybody else, and it's not always an asset, right? So when I got here, there were plenty of opportunities to be like everybody else, and I learned how to code because I needed to eat, and I became like everybody else for a little bit. And granted, everybody's unique. Obviously, that's a given. Everybody has a talent. But in terms of professional life, I jumped into the corporate life and I did the coding, and then I realized that it really wasn't my favorite thing. So I got back to music and I opened a performance space in Chicago and I started writing again and playing again, and that's fun for me.
So when you came to America, were you greeted with welcome arms, or how did that come?
That's not that black and white. On the one hand, there were plenty of opportunities. On the other hand, most opportunities were very different from, how should I put it, my psychological type. They were not in the arts or in intellectual pursuits. They were more like corporate and a bit square. And it was a struggle for me because I decided, okay, now I am in America. I have to go the American way. And I cut pieces of my soul left and right to fit in. And I felt inadequate, and then I fit in, and it wasn't quite happy. I mean, it was very happy for a little while, for just the novelty of it, the experimentation. Like, oh, finally, I'm like everybody else, all of my friends who just wanted to have this professional life and nothing else. And then something started eating at me that it wasn't my thing. But then, of course, my immigration journey was not that smooth. I was doing everything extremely properly, jumping from one visa to another. You know, I went to school, I found a job that was taking care of my work visa and my green card and all that. And I was extremely proud that I carved out that niche for myself. And then I happened to start dating a very wrong guy. He was extremely wonderful and sweet when we were dating, and then he convinced me to marry him, kind of nagged me into that, because he was a lawyer. He was like, well, you don't want to marry me? What, you don't love me? No, 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 no. And I guess I was soft, so I married him, and then he turned abusive in the most grave, serious sense of it. He was abusive physically and emotionally, and it was ugly, actually. My personality changed entirely. And then he convinced me to get rid of the job that was providing for my immigration status. So I became dependent on him, and abuse became only worse. And then he decided that keeping me around was too dangerous because I could start talking about the abusive behaviors. And he turned me in, essentially. I was arrested on immigration grounds, and I spent nearly a month in jail. And it was really, really, really scary. Like, I can make jokes about it now all day because, you know, it happened a long time ago and I'm fine. But I just remember when I was there, it was so humiliating and scary. And the people, you know, the official people were not very nice. But all ended well. And I proved my case, became an American citizen. And I guess now America is welcoming. I like it.
Well, on behalf of Americans, you're very, very welcome here. And on behalf of guys like that, he makes me look really good. You know,
what the Well, thank you. No, I mean, I don't wish him harm because, frankly, I think people with such disposition are their worst enemies. I mean, it's life takes care of things.
Yes.
And
it has a way.
I'm not worried about that.
Has a way of doing that. Let's talk about your music.
Hey.
Tessa Fights Robots.
Yeah, Tessa Fights Robots is the name of my album and my blog. And then I have a music collective, a music project that is called Tessa Makes Love. See, I try to include my name everywhere,
like
just
it.
In case.
That's
and
good. It's a
good name. With my I like it. Thank you. No, I think it's a memorable name. See, I can't even talk. Oh. I think it's a memorable name. Sometimes I have to explain myself after, if I give people my business card, and then I say, don't get any ideas. That's the name of the band. But, yeah. So with my music, I try to do kind of the same thing that I'm trying to do with everything else. I try to get into the heart of humanity. And it sounds silly and pompous, but what I mean is probably awakening of emotions to the degree that I can. I try to create real art and make it theatrical and put people through a journey where they can feel things and not be ashamed of feeling it, whatever it is.
So the album is a concept album. Is it hard to talk just about a segment, like one song or something like that?
The phrase concept album got a bad rep, but I guess it is. And thank you. I take it as a compliment.
I hope so.
It is about a journey of a human being in the world of technology and robots. And maybe less so literal robots, but more so people who are acting like robots, or who think of themselves as hosts of data or different attributes. And it's about confusion and feeling humiliated and feeling dehumanized and trying to find a way, trying to find love and human relationships.
So robots in the sense that people were programmed?
That too, and also accepting that state where you are not subjective and mysterious and undescribable and unlabelable, but somebody who can be dissected into binary, this or that.
That's dangerous, yeah.
And it also doesn't feel very good.
No, that's why there's the threat of artificial intelligence and stuff, but I think thoughts are infinite, so I don't really know that having something that's a robot that's doing artificial intelligence is going to be that big of a threat. I don't know. Just me.
I believe that robots will always be really fast calculating machines. They can be really, really amazingly fast calculating machines. They're never going to be self-conscious. I think that's childish. I mean, it's a nice concept. It sells, it generates clicks. People talk about it in conferences, but that's career opportunism. It's just talking points. As far as the real world, they will never be, I mean, machines are never going to be self-conscious. We can talk about it for another 100 years. But I think that the real danger lies in how they are programmed. Because, for example, I was just reading an article about something. I'm going on a tangent, but I think it's relevant. I forgot which bank they did some mistake. They made a mistake in a calculation, some kind of algorithm. And because of that, real people didn't get loans and lost their homes. So that is a real danger. And who is responsible? The machines? The IT people who programmed it? Nobody is really responsible. Nobody can be held accountable. And we're talking real human lives. Or, for example, when people look for jobs, if they have a personality that is interesting and multifaceted, but the algorithms are designed in a way that it's really hard to make it through the gate if you are not easily dissectable, you know, good luck to all the original people. I mean, and that's a real threat to people who are fully alive and original and creative. So I think that is a much bigger danger than artificial intelligence per se.
Which takes us back to your original point when writing came down. Things could be taken out of context because you could hand somebody something in writing and it had absolutely nothing to do with you know, the context in which you're presenting it. And memory doesn't count as much from the human aspect. So funny, fundamentals.
Oh, absolutely. I think about it all the time, because if we're talking about, I don't know, going by the book, any kind of book. For example, if you tell me a story today and then tomorrow, with the best of intentions, I'm going to write it down and then somebody else is going to follow that story in any kind of way. First of all, I don't really know what you meant. Second of all, the chance of me remembering it exactly the next day without imposing some kind of a subjective interpretations is pretty slim. But then if somebody tries to follow it literally, good luck to all of us. So I think it's a very strange route altogether. And in the past, written word, I think it was intended to be taken with a grain of salt. Even if we're talking about religious traditions, it would be something written down like just cursory notes. But the assumption was that you have to actually have the context in your head and talk to real people who tell you the real context to understand the entire picture. And the notes are just the notes. And where we are today, the written word anywhere, whether it's on Twitter, on a newspaper, or anywhere, it's taken without a context in itself. And we're all arguing because of that.
Someday we'll look back on this and say, yes, we were flat planet thinkers.
I think you're right.
In a lot of senses, yeah. Well, we're doing our best. You have a song called Soul Eaters. I thought was very interesting. What is that about?
Thank you. It is one of my personal favorites. Well, it is about turning people into content and essentially transforming human creativity into money for just few select people. I'm an artist, first of all, and I've been on the receiving end of the process through which big tech corporations deprived creative people of the fundamental income source. So very few people can make money with music, and many people frankly pretend they can, but in reality they can't. So that is the literal interpretation, where you create a structure and turn real creativity into financial profit for yourself, while the people who create things are left essentially as lab rats starving. But it's also about the whole idea of content, quote unquote. Nowadays, people use the word content with a straight face. You can call a song content or a poem content. Like, to me, it's atrocious, because if something is a magical work of art, it's intended to move souls, to create some kind of mystery, some kind of change in one's emotions. And you call it content, like just a generic thing sitting inside of a box. That is so telling, frankly, and it's really descriptive of our culture. And I resent that. So that is one of the reasons I wrote the song.
Hating yourself for not being sick. Soul eaters, look at that chick, she's so slick. Soul eaters, go for the children, teach them to please. Soul eaters, steal this sky and give back the disease. Soul eaters, there's no soul. Ask the scorer, chew your content, wear your collar. There's no soul. Ask the scholar.
You want the content, you want the dollar.
Hating yourself for not being sick. Soul eaters, jump in the circle. Don't be a dick. Soul eaters, magical Tinder. Swipe and be quiet. Soul eaters, love left the house. It got sick, and it died.
Thank you.
very avant-garde, to say the least, and it's so interesting. You have a lot of courage, I have to say, just by your bio and the art you create. You don't really listen to other people. You do what you feel like.
Thank you so much. Yep, ask my mom. She will agree with you.
Okay, Mom. Wherever you are, Mom. Tess is doing you right.
Yeah, I never had the disposition to listen. No, well, when I was a kid, actually, I listened too much to others. That's how I learned not to, frankly.
Who did your artwork for your album cover?
The picture, well, there was a body painting done by Derek Little, and then the rest was done by me.
Courageous. It's just awesome. Really good. Most people are trying to create really commercial, catchy songs and stuff like that, and you just don't care. You're just going to put it out there for interpretation, put it out there for, as you say, what you described to me is it's not contrived at all. It's out there for somebody to bring what they bring to it.
Thank you. That is such music to my ears. I'm very grateful for the kind words.
I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Well, I hope I didn't sound too crappy, but I don't mean thank you. I really appreciate it. And it was a great pleasure to be on your show.
All right. I've been waiting to talk to you. I'm really happy I got a chance.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tessa. Good talking to you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Radio show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
And we're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.